Welcome to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. Here is your host, Chris Tatro.
Hello, listeners, and welcome back to the Hometown Hero Outdoors Podcast. This week, we have a special guest, Liz Collin. She is a journalist with Alpha News here in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. We'll go through her bio real quick, and then we'll introduce you to her. Liz Collin is a mom and wife of a retired law enforcement officer. She's been a truth teller for 20 years. Liz is from Worthington, Minnesota. She's a native from there who has crisscrossed the country, holding anchoring and reporting roles at different stations. She left the mainstream media and has since become an Amazon best-selling author and currently also reports for the Alpha News. So welcome, Liz. Thanks for being here.
Chris, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. And I appreciate all the great work you guys do. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I know that you've been pretty busy and on the road quite a bit lately with your book.
Yeah, it's really a great idea, Chris, for anyone listening or are wondering to put out a book in Minnesota right before the snow starts flying. So amazingly, though, people are turning out to different events and such. So that's been awesome to see. We've met some great people along the way and along the road. It's kind of restored my faith in humanity in a bit in Minnesota. So it's been great.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how Minnesotans can adapt in different climates and weather. And sometimes the weather comes around the corner and smacks you pretty hard, but people still get out there and persevere.
Yeah, and to have like a book tour and somebody actually arrive on a snowmobile is like a dream I think I had as a kid, but it's actually happened. So it's awesome.
That's awesome. Check that box.
Yes,
so exactly. For the listeners out there, Liz is going to be our MC for our banquet this year. So as you all know, Melissa Bachman is going to be our keynote speaker, but Liz is going to be there to guide the evening, which we're pretty excited about. Liz has some roots here, like I said, in the metro with her reporting. And recently she has gone to Alpha News. So do you want to talk a little bit about your history when it comes to your media side of the world?
Sure. Yeah. My long sorted story, but yeah, I'm a Worthington, Minnesota native, as you mentioned, Chris. So I was a little kid who dreamed of being on the news, as goofy as that sounds. But really, from the time I was 5 or 6, I was really enamored with the news. I'd watch the 10 o'clock news with my grandparents and stay up late at night and just thought, you know, that's what I want to do someday. So I graduated from high school, from Worthington High School, and kind of just in between there, I helped to start the Trojan News, we called it. We were the Worthington Trojans. So we had our own daily newscast, and I started a newspaper when I was 10 years old. So I was really focused on what I wanted to do for a long time. And I went to college at the Art Institute of Fort Lauderdale. They have a 18-month broadcasting program there. All the general ed courses and such were all geared toward television and radio broadcasting. So I thought that was a great fit for what I wanted to do. I wanted to graduate as early as possible to jump right in. So I was 19 and I started in Sioux Falls, South Dakota at KDLT. It's not even a station anymore, but I don't think that had anything to do with me. I'm not sure. But I was there for a couple of years. And then I was in Wichita, Kansas for a few years. That's actually where I got my bachelor's degree. So I anchored the morning newscast in Wichita, and then I'd go to college in the afternoon because it was important for me to get that 4-year degree eventually. And then I was off to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania for a couple years. I was with the CBS affiliate there, and I landed my dream job back home in Minnesota in 2008 at WCCO, where I was a longtime anchor and reporter at that station.
Well, that's pretty all over the place. So you get to see quite a bit.
That's kind of the way it works in the business. It's you work, climb your way up and work your way through markets. But you know, where I am currently, I'm at Alpha News now. I've kind of taken the independent journalism role because I think it's the future of media in a way, because I was very troubled about what we were reporting. And more importantly, I think what we were not reporting that the mainstream media has kind of turned into in a bit. And that's kind of what my book is about that I put out recently. And also the fight we're kind of fighting over here at Alpha News.
So when you say the news that you were and were not reporting when it came to being at WCCO or wherever else you had been at that point. So obviously you were in the heat of all of the civil unrest that occurred here in the Twin Cities, being married to who you are. Do you want to talk about who you're married to and
what that looked like? Oh, of course. I wouldn't let an interview pass without that.
Okay, good.
So yeah, I married 5 years ago now. Bob Kroll is his name, but he was the president of the Minneapolis Police Federation, the police union, essentially, in Minneapolis, a longtime police lieutenant in Minneapolis. And we sort of got caught up, as many people did, in the cancel culture of vultures back in May of 2020. You know, Bob was sort of the scapegoat for a lot of things that happened in Minneapolis. Frankly, the Minneapolis Police Department became the scapegoat for many things that were happening. And also, I was dragged into that as well. I was demoted from the position I held for 12 years. I was still at CCO for a couple more years after that, but my role significantly changed. And in my book, I go into details about different things that were said to me, and it was pretty clear that they didn't want me to be a member of that news team anymore. And people who perhaps thought like me or perhaps believed in maybe telling a different side of the story were no longer really welcome there. So I decided I needed to go, and I was kind of blackballed in the television market in Minneapolis through all of this. I mean, we had protests outside our house, protests outside the station and such. So I had to go ahead and sort of chart a different course, but I kind of believed God all along had a plan. And I, from the time I was a little girl, just believed in telling the truth. And I just don't think that the mainstream media, I could give you many examples of how they're not anymore these days. And I didn't really want to be on that side of things anymore.
Yeah, I can't imagine that during the civil unrest part of things, you know, being married to the head of the Minneapolis Police Federation would have been easy at all. And then also to be in the media side of things and try to balance that had been very difficult.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem, Chris, too, is that, you know, public safety, policing became political. And I think we're all paying the price for that. And, you know, I'm also a firm believer in that a woman can sort of chart her own course and, you know, doesn't have to believe in everything that her husband believes in or whatnot. But that's the way this cancel culture works. And that's kind of what I go into in the book. My book is called They're Lying, The Media, The Left, and the Death of George Floyd. And the left to me is this population of people that we've given a lot of power to. It's not Democrats or liberals. You know, I have a lot of those in my life, you know, as we all do. But it's more importantly, it's this sector of the population. They don't just want you canceled. They want you killed. And that was pretty apparent, I think, during 2020. And for some reason, you know, the media decided, I think, and continues to poison the well in a way with the things they put out there about law enforcement, especially troubled me. You know, these are people that are the most selfless, brave people I've ever, you know, have the privilege to meet. And what the media did to them and portrayed them as, you know, I think is something we're all paying the price for. And I wanted to be, you know, in a way, set the record straight in the book that I wrote, and also the work I do over at Alpha News to sort of counter this insanity that in my thought we've let get out of control, you know, not only in Minnesota, but across the country.
So needless to say, you're a very strong and firm believer of law enforcement and the first responders across the nation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, that's not to say that, sure, can first responders, police make mistakes or, you know, there can be, you know, bad people in every profession. But the right way that the media helped paint everything with this broad brush and also, you know, pit people against the police. We've seen what's happened in Minneapolis since. And we've, you know, seen what's happened really to departments across the state as a result of that messaging. And I didn't really feel comfortable with a lot of that. And I, you know, had a voice in the newsroom where I worked, but I didn't after this incident. I understood, you know, even before Bob came along. I mean, I took a Citizens Academy with the Fridley Police Department, and I always encouraged other reporters to do the same. This is a profession that's hard to understand if you don't spend some time studying, but all of a sudden we have, you know, media people, reporters going ahead and judging actions and writing very freely about this profession when they weren't really doing their homework. And also they're taking the word of, you know, these different organizations that also have a stake in the game, but they're not transparent about either. These are organizations who make money off of defunding the police. And we instead, as media members are just giving them a platform without any checks and balances. And we see that continue to play out across the state.
Yeah, I mean, assuming that police officers are robots, that's what it seems like has been the norm for what the culture of pushback on policing looks like right now. Everyone wants everyone to perform like robots. And that's obviously, we're still human and we still have to make decisions in very critical situations that are split second and not always the best option, but you train as much as you can to try to pick the right one. But again, not robots. So people are still human here.
Exactly. Well, you know, Chris, that there's actually robots in San Francisco now that can, you know, kill people, I think, or there's some sort of debate there. So it's just every day, you like, just when you think it can't get more crazy, it does. So,
yeah, you can't make that stuff up. It's just, and, you know, once they do implement robots, I'm sure there'll be plenty of issues there, too. You know, they're not human and they don't have empathy and they can't work their way through situations well enough. But yeah, it's a different world that we're in. That's for sure. So I know you said that you have some involvement with some other organizations. I think you brought up the Minnesota 100 Club and stuff. Do you want to let the listeners know what that club is?
Yeah. So I'm kind of a newer board member on the Minnesota 100, which is a great, nonprofit in Minnesota. They award, different monetary, awards to families of first responders, who are sometimes, injured or die. Not only in the line of duty, but just other things as well. Even this last Christmas, you know, giving gifts to the children of fallen first responders. Megan Mattson is also on the board with me. I know you guys are a big supporter of the Mattsons, which everyone appreciates across the state as well. They're just wonderful, you know, brave and selfless people. Megan, you know, wants to give back to the community after what she's been given, which is just, you know,
right.
Everything in the world about her. I've always, you know, had an admiration, you know, for law enforcement, for first responders. And I'm kind of, sadly, where I worked before, that was something you couldn't really do is show your support because that's a conflict of interest or whatnot. So it's nice to be on the other side of things to you know, give back in any way I can. And, you know, I'm happy to help you guys out as an MC and such. But any, you know, of my talents that I can share with the law enforcement community, you know, I'm happy to do because I think they do so much for all of us. And basically kind of, you know, sad to see what a lot of that, what has transpired and all that's happened.
Right. So now going back to you're saying the conflict of interest with being at your last station that you're at. I don't know how much you want to deep dive into it or if your book covers it and you can allude to it and do like a high flyover on it too. But when it came to the reporting and what was seen in the media and stuff, how much control was there really? I mean, were you told that like, hey, this is what you're going to report on and it doesn't change, or were you allowed to think freely about how that was done or not?
Yeah, I think, I do touch on a few different examples in the book. Just going into after George Floyd's death, there was a mandate put in place at WCCO that half of the people we interviewed had to be non-white or from a protected class. And I met that mandate with questions as to, this to me seems like the definition of racism. Right. I actually had to judge people on the color of their skin before I put them on camera. But you know, you don't have to look far, you know, in the local media to see how this is, you know, been adopted, and that's fine. I mean, if this is what they want, this is the route that they want to go. But I just think that, you know, it's another example of pushing propaganda and not covering the news. There are examples, just with COVID as well. You know, you don't have to look very far about what the media covers when it comes to that, and what they don't. You know, we do a lot of reporting over here at Alpha News about vaccine injuries, vaccine deaths. There are certainly questions many people have about this ongoing issue, the origins of COVID, et cetera. But these are not stories you see in the mainstream media, and that's for a reason. So. I also talk in the book a little bit about, you know, just more going back to the George Floyd incident. We had a few different protests, as I talked about, at our house, but John Thompson being one of the people that were at a protest in August of 2020. He was a candidate for state rep at the time, but he beat, you know, me and Pinata effigy in the driveway of my house. And I called the station and basically said, I think this is newsworthy because this guy is a candidate for state rep. Minnesota voters should probably know, you know,
what he's doing. Yeah.
What he's doing. But it took days for WCCO to even cover that story. And not only that, and that was after, you know, a lot of viewers emailed in and said, you know, like, why aren't you guys saying anything about this? But we had his criminal history that was sent to us at WCCO, and that wasn't reported on until after the election. I mean, it was about 8 or 9 months later when they decided to report on that. And it also raised questions of his residency, all the things that played out in the media eventually that WCCO was privy to, but decided not to report. So it's kind of this lies by omission that I talk about in the book. And I was really troubled by.
That's got to be pretty difficult to have where you work sit back and not report something that's literally happening in your front yard, like literally in your front yard.
Yeah. And it, you know, it speaks to, I think, the hypocrisy and sort of what the media has turned into, sadly. And this is, you know, the institution that I really believed in. And I, you know, I still do. I don't think that we're going to get very far as if we can't have these conversations. And I was going to say that the battle we fight now, Chris, at Alpha News is our platforms are sometimes removed. You know, we're on a YouTube suspension right now because we did a story about vaccine injuries. Excuse me. So there's, you know, clearly this battle being waged by big tech and such that we need to acknowledge and be able to talk about.
You know, we just had another podcast where we discussed that briefly about even our page and our social media stuff, and the growth of our stuff is very stagnant just because of who we are and what we support. I feel definitely on Instagram, I feel like we're shadow banned on there. You know, our growth on Facebook grows. It's the same company, so it's really weird to me. I don't understand that, but our Instagram fluctuates. We'll get a bunch of followers one day and then we'll lose a ton the next day, and I'm like, man, I don't know how that's even a thing. Like, you watch these things and what we've built over the past 5 years, and it's never really been that way until the last two. And then also with our Facebook, you know, we have 20,000 followers or so on our page, and you post something and then the analytics show that only a couple hundred people have seen it. So it's just, obviously there is something going on behind the scenes when it comes to the algorithms and suppressing some of the stuff that we're doing, even to help people. I mean, we're a nonprofit trying to help people's mental health, you know, get outdoors and do different things and help improve their mental health so they can be here tomorrow. And still it's being squashed. It's really frustrating.
Yeah. And you see what's happening in the news now, Chris, with, you know, these Twitter files and these huge data dumps of what's happening with what information we're getting and what we're not. I don't think it surprises a lot of us who, you know, suspected this was part of a bigger picture, part of a bigger plan. But it's also interesting how the media will spin these stories. And that's what we're supposed to stand for as journalists, right? Is freedom of speech. And we're supposed to hold the powerful accountable and all of that. But I feel like in a way, the media has gotten away from that. And I give many examples in the book about, you know, being more fixated on pushing propaganda than asking questions. And I don't think you have to look very far. You know, some very questionable leaders in Minneapolis and, you know, their actions back in 2020 that, again, we're all paying for to this day.
Yeah, it's going to take a little while, that's for sure. Get over that hurdle or hurdles, many. So in your book, do you talk about the after effects when it comes to some of the law enforcement officers out of Minneapolis and mental health issues at all?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that's really what I wanted to do with the book. I felt like there were so many people that were never given a voice in all of this, including these hundreds of officers who fled the department for good reason. You know, we talked to officers who are trapped in the third precinct, just this horrific setup, essentially, by the police administration, by the mayor of Minneapolis. And, you know, it goes all the way to the state level with Governor Walz. But, you know, and I'm really not trying to be political. These happen to be the leaders in place at the time. So this is this is what happened on their watch. But we learn, you know, through these stories, you know, that this is part of the plan to give up the third precinct as sort of a sacrifice to the protesters that day. After a couple of days of riding had occurred, they thought if they, you know, give the precinct to them, it'll be sort of this win and they'll stop. Well, clearly we know now that that did not work. But, you know, we talked to one officer who, you know, talks about how all of their personal belongings are collected that afternoon. A city bus pulls up to the precinct and they go ahead and, you know, load all of their personal belongings into the city bus. And then hours pass. And finally, the time comes that they're going to go ahead and surrender the building. And, you know, the bus at that time is parked a half mile away. Well, not only that, but it arrives late. But the bus pulls up to collect their personal belongings right to the door. But it's for the optics. They want these officers to run through the angry crowds. They have bottles and, you know, rocks thrown at them. And then the bus is actually even late to pick them up. So, but they didn't want an officer to be killed, just an officer to be hurt is what they were going for. So I just felt like a lot of these stories needed to be documented. And I think the blame needed to be put on people that it never was before. The media instead sort of propped up people as you know, being these leaders through all of this. And I knew, you know, I was sort of privy just through Bob to some of the backstories with some of these people. But also there was so much public documentation that the media just completely ignored when it came to, you know, the current Attorney General of Minnesota, Keith Ellison, Governor Walz, Mayor Fry, et cetera. And I wanted to document that in a way because I think there was so much that was just never reported on.
Yeah. So how did Bob, you know, go through all this and stay sane? I mean, that's obviously a lot going on, you know, but not only between, you know, his job, his family, you, kids. How did he hold up and make it through all that?
Well, I'm never sure if we can say Bob is sane just ever, but that's probably any wife talking about their husband.
Right.
Yes. But yeah, I think that, you know, it was hard for Bob as it was for any police officer. These are people that sign up to serve and protect a place. And, you know, Bob sacrificed a lot for the city of Minneapolis, just as any Minneapolis police officer does. You know, he was with the department for more than 30 years and cared deeply about the people, about the businesses. And that's what also bothered me is the media kind of portrayed Minneapolis police as this occupying force or these horrible, you know, racist people. And it's simply so far from reality, so far from the truth. If they would just do a little bit of homework and really spend time with them and go on ride alongs and be, you know, take an active interest in this profession rather than, you know, listening to, you know, I say these activist group that really you got to follow the money. Who's making the money off of all of this? And this, you know, a lot of these people are not speaking for Minneapolis, but for too long, I think people have let them speak. You know, as far as Bob, I think that, you know, his story is similar to a lot of these cops in the city who, you know, Bob was able to retire. He was retirement age and had planned to retire anyway. He left a few months earlier than he'd planned. But, you know, I talked to in the book, there's one longtime police officer. She served in the military. She's living her dream in Minneapolis, doing great police work. And it's sad, you know, just heartbreaking to hear from her. Her career stops essentially. You know, she's very young in her 40s, and she had a lot of years left, but she felt that, you know, leaders didn't have her back. Sadly, people on scene, she tells a story about, this is after the riots, weeks after the riots, that she's trying to save a guy's life and, you know, basically has her fingers plugging, you know, an area where he was shot on a Saturday night. And an angry crowd gathers around her, swearing at her, the guy's swearing at her. And she's just like, this can't be my, you know, profession. This is, you know, what is this doing to me long term?
And right.
Yeah, it's people like that, you know, who I think really deserve to share their stories.
Totally. Yeah. And we took a handful of Minneapolis law enforcement officers out to Green Bay. We did some fishing with Green Bay Trophy Fishing out there. And there's a couple of Minneapolis cops that came with, and I think two of them had medicaled recently, and then also a couple St. Paul police officers as well. And I remember one of them telling me, I want to say it was one of them. I have talked to a lot of people, so I'm hoping it's the accurate person. But they told me that out of their entire shift from 3rd Precinct, that there was only one person that was there previous to being on the same shift. So everybody else that they had previously worked with on that shift have left or retired.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, you know, that part of the reporting we do at Alpha News now is talking about that, just, you know, recruitment, retention, you know, what has this done? I mean, the media made it seem like, you know, this massive problem with all of these officers. But I really think that, you know, you're lowering the bar in a way when it comes. Bob always talks about, you know, 800-900 people would apply for 20 jobs back when he became a cop. So what sort of problems are we going to have when they can't even in Minneapolis, you know, recruit a dozen people? Who are they? Who are they hiring? You know, are you really getting the best of the best? That's a question that remains to be answered. But I don't think, you know, we can all feel that good about who, you know, is going into the profession, because so many people just don't want to anymore. And, you know, I think we have to all do our part to turn that around.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects when it comes to law enforcement and things that can weigh on you for a long time. Not only is it from your day-to-day of wearing the gear that you wear and the things that you have to do with that gear on. It could be foot pursuits, you know, my line of work, riding recreational vehicles or just doing different things, but also the different things that you're exposed to, you know, going to DOAs and vehicle accidents, shootings, domestic abuse, child abuse. I mean, there's just a lot. And your longevity in a career is already difficult to begin with. And then when you add in some of the issues when it comes to what happened politically in the last couple of years, you know, that's obviously a huge weight on people's shoulders. And a lot of times police officers feel stuck because this is what we do and we have a passion for it. Excuse me. And with that passion, you know, it's difficult when the lack of support's there, because that really weighs on you. And I think that, you know, police officers are pretty empathetic people, and we think pretty heavily on pretty much everything that we do within our shift and replay that in our head a lot just so we can do something better next time. I mean, the situation might have been totally fine, but you're always replaying how you could have probably handled it better and learn for the next time. And that's what becoming a veteran officer is in time, is learning from things you did well and things you did wrong. And when you start losing those veteran officers due to PTSD issues or lack of support, it can be difficult with that turnover. Like you said, recruitment issues is huge. You know, I think when I applied for my position, there's 1,300 applicants.
Wow.
And that was 2011 or 12. I got hired in 2012. And then now it's down to a few hundred. That's it. So it's, yeah, there's a huge shift. And hopefully we'll come out of it. I think we will. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I think, you know, Bob always talks about the pendulum swinging. It's got to swing back. And I think we're seeing that in some aspects. I feel like it couldn't swing much more the other way. I think there's enough people who are looking at, and I talk about this in the book. The last section of the book is called, the right side of history, ? So the, you know, we heard all these leaders, I use a lot of air quotes, talking about they want to be on the right side of history after all of this. And I'm not really sure if this is what their intention is. This really what the right side of history looks like when businesses have closed up for good, you know, not even just in downtown Minneapolis, but across the city, when, you know, there used to be a few carjackings a year, if that. And now there are hundreds in Minneapolis. We have record homicides. You know, for nearly 3 years in Minneapolis, is this really what the right side of history, you know, looks like? And I think anybody with any common sense would say no.
Oh, I know a lot of people who moved out of Minneapolis since all this has happened.
Yeah.
It's an exodus. One of my best friends moved from, he owned a barbershop in Minneapolis and now he's in Stillwater. It's just been a crazy shift, and people want to ensure that they're in a place where they feel protected and their leadership is there to help them with that. And Minneapolis, I think that a lot of those residents don't feel that or haven't felt that for a little bit.
Yeah, I just was actually talking to a gal this week. She has a daughter that lives in the Loring Park area in Minneapolis. And she said, oh, yeah, for more than a year, you know, she just leaves her car unlocked at night after she had her, you know, car windows bashed in several times and everything taken. But this is just the, now the new norm, but you just leave it unlocked because it's rifled through, she said, at least once a week, if not more. So
Just leave it open so they don't damage it to get in there.
Right. So you don't want to come out to, you know, and things, stories like this were really unimaginable, I think, to many of us a few years ago. I'm a bit more of a naive person. I grew up in a small town. So, you know, I'm kind of like that, but it's, you know, all of us are thinking about our safety, I think, like we never have before, you know, due to all of this. I actually did a recent conceal and carry class, and I was amazed at just the number of not only the number of people, but how different the backgrounds were from everybody. You know, this is obviously top of mind across the board, not just if you're a, you know, suburban housewife or whatever.
Right.
You're it was, you know, old, young, you know, men, women, really, really eye opening to see.
We have a lot of politically different political views that are different, too, that we're going through that. I do permit to carry on the side, and I saw that throughout a lot of the 2000 to 2022 time frame, where there was a very large demographic that was variable than what I was used to seeing in people's and their safety. And it's kind of funny you bring up the, well, I shouldn't say it's funny. I should say it's sad. But
if we didn't laugh, we'd be crying, Chris. So yes,
it's true. It's true. But you got to laugh in order to get through it.
Yeah.
So I was just down in Texas recently with some of my friends for the organization with HHO, and was with Sean Olsberg, and we were driving around, and he went to the local post office to drop off some packages, and we get out of the truck and we walk in, and he leaves his truck running and unlocked. I'm like, dude, what? Like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, we're good here. You know, it's Texas. And like, there's no way I would do that where I'm at, you know, especially in the East Metro, or I mean, the East Metro is not terrible, but I mean, anywhere in the metro area, it's spreading throughout the metro, carjackings happening, vehicles being stolen at gas stations, even in my hometown here or some of the other East Metro areas, but it's picking up.
Yeah. You know, and that, maybe that's the good part, Chris, about it being like 40 below zero, if that, deters anybody, but
right. Yeah. Well, I think the big problem now is they're worried about people keeping their cars, getting them warmed up before they go out there and leaving their vehicles unlocked. Right. And next thing you know, they're gone.
Yeah, exactly. I'm glad you're fighting. I lost my voice for a few days and I'm having a hard time coming back from it, but
yeah, I don't know where
right now, Chris, especially you too.
All of a sudden mine started to act up on me. So I feel bad, but I'll just company likes misery, right?
Yeah, both exactly. Of us losing her.
So about your book, obviously I've never written a book or anything like that. So what was that like? Was it difficult? I imagine it's a pretty tall task and a lot of thinking about how to order that up, like, or get everything in order. How did that look like for you? Was it difficult or?
Yes, it was, you know, just being a TV reporter, I thought, well, okay, it's kind of what I do, write scripts, if you will, for a living. This is just like you write a bunch of scripts. But boy, was I wrong. This is a totally different, totally different undertaking. Yeah. And everybody said, oh, it's a lot of work. And I'm like, well, I like work, so that's okay. I like work.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, you know, especially I really wanted to get it out before the election was sort of my goal in all of this, but it was pretty intense, you know, for a solid 6 months, and I self-published. So, you know, it's easy enough to get it on, you know, these different platforms. But I also figured, you know, I know how the world works. You know, will Amazon even, you know, let me upload this thing or will that?
Right.
All? And I had a great editor, actually a former police officer who's also like an English professor. So I can't even imagine a better combination to find somebody like we did. So he was great to work with, and he had written a couple books in the past. So he was just a wonderful help through all of this, but it's a lot. I mean, the book could really be 1,000 pages, but then nobody would read it. So you have to also decide, all right, is this worthwhile? Is this not, you know, what's the most important parts? And that's what I wanted to hit on. And I think all told, it's like 260 pages. And a lot of people also, I'm like, you know, we live in a world where do people even read books anymore? So you have to kind of get through that too. But, you know, in hearing from people, since it's been out there for a couple months now, it's the reviews are great. And we've been an Amazon bestseller really since its release. So we're, you know, so thankful for that. But I think it really also shows that there are a lot of critical thinkers out there and people are questioning things. You know, are we really being, you know, told, you know, the truth? And, you know, I feel like I named the book early on, you know, that they're lying, because I watched this kind of a front row seat to a lot of it. And I just was like, you know, they're just lying about so much of this. So the title was the easiest part. But yeah, just the process itself was certainly a learning experience.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, just writing alone is not my forte, but when it comes to putting together a book, I can imagine it's a mountain that you got to climb in order to get to where you need to go, and be difficult to have all these interviews and stories from individuals and trying to pick which ones you feel are need to rise to the top in order to be shared. Not that other people's experiences or information is not important. It's just kind of figure out what's going to work within the book size that you have that's going to be pushed out there. That I can't imagine that was easy.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, everybody in the book kind of deserves their own book. So that's what was hard to edit out, you know, some things just to keep the book moving along. I've encouraged some to, you know, hopefully they'll go ahead and continue. But I, you know, I thought I could just do a series about their lying about everything and just could, could right. continue, but
just put a new title on everyone and
yeah.
same theme. Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
So Amazon did take your book, and like you said, you're an Amazon bestseller on there. So what does that look like? How many books have you sold at this point?
Yeah, I think, you know, the numbers are all over the place, but if people go ahead and look it up on Amazon, so again, it's They're Lying, The Media, The Left, and The Death of George Floyd. You'll see we have more than 250 reviews at this point, mostly for 5 stars. The people, I think I have 1 1-star, and that's from somebody who didn't read the book. So, the trolls did try to come out in force, but thank God the truth seekers, the truth tellers were able to counter that very, very quickly. So, you know, I think the story resonates with anybody in law enforcement who has seen this all play out. I think there are some journalists who've read the book. They won't acknowledge publicly that they did, but there are people behind me that way, because I think many of us have been troubled by the mainstream media that have been a part of it for a while now. And, you know, I even talk about in the book, I grew up not really being political. I mean, we never even talked politics really in the house where I grew up. I was married, I talk about this at talks, but I was married to a Democrat, if you can believe it, for, 11 years. That was he actually worked for the Democratic Party of all things. And I could have a job and an anchor position then. But then I decided to marry a police officer who happens to be a Republican, and holy hell, look up. But now that's the world we live in now,
right.
Which I think is,
sad,
interesting contrast and sad, but yeah, the book is, we've been doing all these, book stops, which has been awesome to meet so many great people, along the way. So it's been going well, and we want to, get as many books out there just to get people to, sort of know the truth and think differently about, this movement that happened in Minnesota. And I, talk about this in the book, that Minnesota nice to me sort of turned into Minnesota naive. There was a lot more happening behind the scenes than we were told.
Yes. Yeah. So when you come to the banquet, you're going to bring some books?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I'll bring books. Yep.
Cool. Sure. So if you're out there listening and you're interested in coming to the banquet, you come and meet Liz, and you can also meet Melissa and some field staff and some other individuals, but Liz will bring some books. And then I'm trying to think of what else I wanted to cover regarding the banquet. Well, we know Melissa is going to be coming to the range, but it's not like you might have had some prior obligations.
Oh, I'll figure it out. Yeah, I'll get back to you on that. Okay. I don't know if anybody wants to see me on the range, though, Chris, but yeah.
Okay. It's all right. So just down the road from you guys, so it's nice.
Yes, close. I know it's close.
But even beforehand, we have the cocktail hour that our VIPs will have access to get to hang out. So you're more than welcome to come and hang out for that, too, and say hi to everyone and
No, I really appreciate you having me. And I, you know, really am a firm believer in what you guys do. So it'll be a fun day. No matter what, I'm excited. And already that time of year sounds exciting to me considering where we are right now.
Nice transition out of the winter, get into spring, get people moving. Yeah, I think everyone's a little antsy that time of year. So for the listeners, March 25th, 2023, the banquet will be at the Minnesota Army National Guard Aviation Hangar, Holman Field in St. Paul. Our tickets are going on sale for the banquet on January 15th. We'll have an early bird special for 1 week for tickets. It'll be discounted at $80. After a week, they'll go to $100. Then we have VIP tickets that'll be on sale for $200 each. We'll get you early access to our range time at Best Defense Army and Range. And also for cocktail hour before the banquet with Tito's. So Tito's has always been good to us. So people like to come and enjoy that. So, but yeah, so, and then Liz will be there to guide the night, like I said before. And then Melissa Bachman is a keynote speaker and some other awesome stories from some of our members that have been through some pretty critical incidents. And also a person of the year we'll be presenting award to. Can't tell anyone who that is yet, but it's a good story and a good, very awesome person. But look forward to the night, and I really appreciate you joining us on the podcast to help talk about who you are and what your story is and your experiences in life.
Well, thank you, Chris, again for having me, and I'm excited already about March, and really can't thank you enough for all you guys do. So there's many of us that appreciate you guys so much.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks, and yeah, and whenever you see a police officer or anyone else in the first responder world, let them know about us. We're here to help them.
Absolutely. Definitely. We'll do that.
We'll have to get Bob on a trip.
Yeah. Oh, be careful what you ask for. You can have them anytime you want, Chris.
All right. Sounds like a plan. Well, again, thank you for coming. And for all our listeners, we look forward to seeing you at the banquet. And as Dan Meyer would say, we'll see you out in the water and in the woods.
Thank you for listening to the Hometown Hero Outdoors podcast. For more information about Hometown Hero Outdoors, visit our webpage at www.hometownherooutdoors.org.